Jetzt soll man nun wieder. Wollen zu kompensieren, stärkt für das Ihnen beendet, da betiegt sind und von den Ebenen übers. Alex. Kamsa will not be killed tonight, but he's going to be in a lot of anxiety. Because Krishna continues walking down the road, the royal road. It's actually said in the Bhagavatam, the royal road in the Torah. And he's dispensed with demonic washermen, the Rajak and Dairu Kari. And then he's taken the clothes, the very fancy clothes from that washerman, and he's taking what he wants, and then he goes to the weaver who's given him wonderful ornaments, very soft, that are suitable for wrestling with jewels embedded in it. And then he's gone further, and who did he see?
Sudama.
So, and there was so much of an affection and exchange. And he said, whatever you want. He gave the weaver his great benediction, but the Sudama said, whatever you want, I said. And Sudama prayed first for
devotion,
second,
friendship.
Third compassion. And he walked further now. And when he walked further, oh, here what happens. As he walked down the king's road, Lord Madhav, he saw a young hunchback woman who had an attractive face. And she was carrying a tray of unguents or fragrant ointments as she walked along. And then Krishna, who bestows the word uses rasa prada, that he's prada means the giver, and rasa means different transcendental moods of ecstasy. So when this Rasa Prada, when Krishna saw her, he smiled at her. So soon as Krishna smiled at someone, especially a young lady, you know that they are finished. They're completely attracted to him. So Krishna said to her, and she had a hunchback, and her back was curved, the neck, the waist, the chest, like hump in the back, and Krishna said, who are you, O beautiful woman? And there she was with a hunchback. Oh, you have ointments with you. Who are these ointments for, my dear lady? Please tell us who these. He's very boldly just approaching her in that way. Please give us both, Balaram and myself, some of your finest ointments. And if you do so, you'll gain a great boon. So Krishna's already shown with the washerman. He said the same thing, practically speaking, to the washerman, although he didn't say, oh, beautiful washerman. He said the same thing. You'll get such great fortune if you give us the clothes. Krishna was just asking for whatever he wanted. Because after all, there was going to be a big festival tomorrow. So there he was in his fine new clothes with his fine ornaments that the weaver had given him and wearing a wonderful garland. And the only thing lacking was all the different fragrances and his body painted in a wonderful way. So he said to Krishna, please tell us truthfully, who are these for? But actually, things are really meant for both of us, for myself and Balaram.
So this Kubja, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, she's not an ordinary person. She's Sadharani. She's not on the level of the gopis and not on the level of the queens, because their love for Krishna is pure. But in Kubja's relationship with Krishna, there is some selfishness that I want you to come and be with me. This will happen later to satisfy my desires. Well, on the other hand, the gopis and the queens too, they're thinking about simply how to make Krishna happy. So this Kubja is not an ordinary person, even though she's not considered to be on the level at this point of these most exalted devotees of Krishna in the mood of conjugal rasa, but she's seen as an expansion of Satyabhauma. Satyabhauma's potency is called the Bhushakti, or the Shakti of the earth. And the Shakti of the earth, so Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur explains that her potency is the earth. And because the earth is overburdened by so many demonic forces, therefore, she has a hunchback because of the way. And Krishna is telling her, don't worry, I'm going to straighten everything out, and I'll straighten you out too, and you can be able to stand up straight, and everything will be okay, because the great Kamsa is actually going to be killed. So this is the hidden message, in one sense, in the past point, but past time. But yet, Krishna is really rasavada. He's going to give different kinds of rasas. He's going to give the mood of a lover to Kubja. He's going to give friendship to the coward boys. And what's the main thing that happens when a bunch of boys are together? They just laugh and make jokes and things like that. So hasiras is going to give that. And at the same time, when Krishna is walking down the street, he doesn't walk alone. Everyone is so attracted to him. There's tens and tens of people just following him. And when they see all the things that Krishna is doing, he kills the washerman like this, he benedicts like this. And with Kubja, he's going to completely straighten out her hunchback. He's the original chiropractor. And he's going to completely straighten her out. And in that way, and he's going to, and that's adbhutaras, or very, very, very astounding rasa. So the pastime is going to continue. So Krishna said, who are you, O beautiful one? Oh, you have ointments, unguents. Who are they for, my dear lady? Please tell us truthfully, who are they meant for? But actually, because they are the finest of ointments, and because we are the finest of people, myself and Balaram, please, you give them to us. I want some of them. And if you do this, if you give what you have, your expertise, then you will get the greatest of boons, the greatest of benedictions. So Krishna started joking with her. In one sense, he spoke very sweetly to her, just like he spoke sweetly to the washerman. And she's going to reciprocate with him. So Sadharani, the maidservant, this Kubja, replied, oh, handsome one. He called, it's interesting because in the Sanskrit, she says, Dasya. Dasasmi aham sundar kamsa samata. I'm oh, handsome one. I'm a servant of Kamsa, but actually, it could be seen that actually she's, oh, handsome one, I am your servant. She's already very attracted to him. And she, interestingly, when in the verse she says, oh, handsome one, in the singular, but she's her eyes are really only on Krishna. But because she's surrounded by many people, she can't just, so she has to cover that a little bit. So she says, I'm a servant of King Kamsa, who highly regards me for the ointments that I make. Also, sandalwood. My name is Trivakra, curved in three places. Who else but you two? So now she's covering it. Yuvan uses the plural word. Who else but you two? Her eyes are actually on Krishna. She's using the singular, and then she uses the plural for him, for both Balara and Krishna. Who else but you two deserve my ointments? You really deserve whatever I have. Even though the Lord of the Bulges, even though Kamsa likes them so much, her mind. Rupa Pishala Maturja, her mind became overwhelmed. We have to see this as like a picture where everywhere Krishna goes, everyone's mind becomes overwhelmed by his beauty, by his form, by his charm. He's so charming how he deals, by his sweetness, by his smiles, by his words. So her mind became overwhelmed by these things, his beauty, his charm, the way he deals, his sweetness, his smiles, his words, and the way he glances. He just looks, he's walking down the road, but he glances at someone from the corner of his eyes, and they're completely captured. There's one verse in the 15th chapter of the 10th canto where it says, Gopyartha drikshitam drisho abhyagaman sameta, that when Krishna was turning from the forest, Krishna, the gopis, their eyes act independently and they want to see Krishna because, and therefore as a group, abhyagaman sameta, as a group they come out. The gopis, because their eyes want to see Krishna, because the eyes are thinking, the ears can see Krishna, they can perceive Krishna and hear Krishna, and no one knows. Because after all, they're young ladies, and that's supposed to be looking at beautiful Krishna. So their ears can hear Krishna, and their nose can smell the fragrance of Krishna, nobody knows, but the eyes have to be shy. So their eyes become envious of their ears and their nose. And so it doesn't say they wanted to see Krishna, but their eyes wanted to see Krishna. They wanted to see Krishna because he's so beautiful. So there's in the Sanskrit, of course, I don't know Sanskrit, but just looking at some of the commentaries from the Acharyas, we can see there's such subtlety and beauty and great depth of meaning in the way that Srila Vyasadeva and Sukadeva Goswami have composed these verses. So seeing Krishna's beauty, seeing his charm, seeing his sweetness, his smiles, his words, and his glances, Tuvakra gave both Krishna and Balaram generous amounts of the ointment. So very parallel situation to the washerman. Give me those things that you say that are supposedly, seemingly meant for Kamsa, but actually they are meant for the best of persons, not for this demon who's occupying, trying to occupy and enviously occupy the role of the central figure. So then, she herself, and some of the Acharyas say that she gave the ointments to them. She gave to Krishna. She gave. I'll read it. So, like a white or a golden, something that contrasted their complexion, different ointments. And to Balaram, gave a bluish one. So it was very artistic and decorative, and you could actually see it. She put these ointments on him. They gave it to him. And the lords looked very beautiful. And Krishna got yellow ointments, and Balaram got blue-colored ointments. And she and the coward boys started decorating Krishna, just like the deities get decorated,
putting these marks on their cheeks, on their foreheads, on their arms. So Krishna was getting ready for the wrestling arena. Not exactly for the wrestling arena, but for walking into the wrestling arena. Where everyone, it was like a great amphitheater where everyone was on grandstands like at a sports event where everyone was sitting down, and the wrestlers are there, and we'll hear about this even later in the chapter, Krishna wailing, and there's music and everything. And suddenly, and tomorrow we'll hear this, Krishna and Balaram walk in in new clothes. And with garlands, beautiful, wonderful garlands, and decorated in this wonderful way. And they're so confident. And they're just walking in. And everyone is just looking at Krishna, capturing everyone's attention with their charm, with their beauty, with their confidence, with their smiles. Interestingly, which is a little bit of a tangent, or it's a comment on the beauty of Krishna and how. So sometimes have any of you ever seen like the Mahabharata, the different movies, Ramanand Sagas and Ramayana or something, and these different videos that come on, and then there's the Krishna cartoons. I've seen the Facebook Krishna cartoons. So nowadays, there's this new drama that I saw, I happened to see one with Krishna killed Bakashori. It's just a little boy that he was quite cute. But the real way to see Krishna is not by cartoons and watching it, but really through hearing. Because by hearing, your mind creates the most beautiful form of Krishna. And then when you look at Krishna, especially when they have an adult Krishna, or even a cartoon, it's never quite as beautiful as your mind could create. It's something, and they try to make it beautiful or strong or this or that. But when you hear, the mind can create something still more wonderful. So it's always how do you play Krishna, who's unlimitedly beautiful? How do you decorate him in a drama or something like that? The mind can create, and that's how actually the path of hearing is the best of paths. Actually, in Kali Yuga, people tend not to have the patience to sit in a class, not pull up your mobile phone and just check your emails or whatever, just in case something urgent has come through, or your whatever social media is your favorite poison. Yes, but the hearing. And hear in such a way, if the hearing is right and the speaker is right, then there's that combination, like with Maharaj Prakin and Sukadeva Swami, that Krishna actually is present in that. So that same Krishna was covered with yellowish ointments, decorated in a wonderful way. Patterns, Sukadeva Swami says there were patterns on his cheeks, on his chest, in his arms. Kubja was decorating. All the boys joined in the fun and started decorating and, painting Krishna. It was quite a festival in that way. So Krishna was so pleased with Kubja, with Trivakra, and he wanted to give her a benediction. He decided to straighten her hunchback out. And she was a girl with a lovely face, but she was, due to her karma, she was deformed. So he wanted to demonstrate the results of having seen her. So what he did,
And he stood in front of her, and with his feet, he pressed down on her toes. So his feet held her toes. With his left hand, he put his left hand behind her. And then with his right hand, he used these two fingers. It directly says, under her chin, his left hand behind her, and he...
Yes.
And if you've ever had a chiropractic adjustment, it can be painful, but this was not painful at all. And immediately, by the touch of Krishna, she was transformed into the most beautiful woman. She was already quite comely, but she became the most beautiful woman, completely straightened up. And Vishnath Chakrabarti Thakur says, from that time onward, she had a straight body. She became the best amongst women of Vidya Goswami. And the main reason for her transformation was actually the touch of Krishna's hand. And the secondary reason, just to make it not a human-like pastime, he used his feet and his fingers and his left hand. And in this way, he was demonstrating that it's very easy for him to correct the faults that we suffer from due to our samsara being in this material world and the karma we carry with us. And not only, Sanatana Goswami said, not only did she become a beautiful woman, she became completely attracted to him. So she began, that attraction became very strong to be with Lord Kesava. So in front, remember, the coward boys are there, Balaram are there, and there's all these onlookers just following as she grabbed Krishna's cloth in front of everyone. And she smiled at him and addressed him as follows. Oh, come over here. Come over to my house. Let us go to my home. I cannot bear to leave you here. She became so overwhelmed by her attraction to Krishna. Oh, best of males, please take pity on me. You have agitated my mind with your touch. It's your fault. And Vishnu Chakrabarti Thakur, because there he is in front of Krishna's there, in front of all the people. How is he going to deal with this? In front of his elder brother Balaram, and elder brother is, there's some Vatsalyaras in there. The, you know, parental love, and these aren't the things you do in front of parental type of people. So Krishna said, oh, you want to invite me to your house so we can have some food? Is that why you want me to come? And he says, right in front of everyone, I can't leave you here. Lord Krishna says, but people who are just standing on the road who must misunderstand your intentions. Please don't speak like this. Because Krishna and all the coward boys are going, all laughing. And she says, directly, I can't help but being agitated. It's your fault because you've touched me. It's not my fault. And then Krishna, before answering, first he looked at Balaram, see how he was taking this. His Balaram was watching everything. And then he looked at the faces of the coward boys, and then he began to laugh. And he said, and by his smile, the kind of smile that indicated, oh, these women of Mathura, they're really something, aren't they? Now they're really showing us their nature. And he answered in such a way as Krishna does. He said, let's hear what he said. He said, oh, lady with the beautiful eyebrows, as soon as I fulfill my purposes, then I will certainly visit your house. There men can relieve their anxiety. Indeed, you're the best refuge for us homeless travelers. So from Balaram's point of view, and from the coward's point of view, he was saying, Totabatme, you know, yes, yes. And he was just putting her off. But from her point of view, she said, oh, he's going to come at some point also. So very nice. So he satisfied everyone in just laughing. So then he spoke in that way, very, very sweetly. And then he kept on walking down the road with everyone. He walked further down the road, and then he walked into the area where all the vices were. And it says they all came out, and they worshipped him and Balaram with pan, garlands, fragrant substances. So there's never any shortage for Krishna, but yet when he asks someone to do something, it's the fortune of that person that they get the opportunity to gain the benedictions that come from serving Krishna. Then, soon as the ladies of Mathura saw him, they became completely agitated. This is the nature of Krishna. It's just so beautiful. Feels the hearts of everyone who sees it. And they couldn't move. They stood as still as figures in a painted picture. They could not even move. They were shocked when they saw the perfection of all beauty walking in front of them. And then Krishna kept walking. And he began to ask the local people, where is the arena? Because he had been invited specifically to attend the Danajagya, which was a worship of Lord Shiva, which takes place because Krishna, Akura met Kamsa on the Ekadasi. Then he arrived in Vrindavan on the Dwadasi, and then they left on the Trayodasi, and the next day is the Chaturdasi, the day that Lord Shiva is worshipped, and that's the day they were going to do tomorrow in this sequence. They were going to perform the sacrifice and have the rest in the arena, the event that Krishna was especially invited for. So he was asking everyone, where is the arena where the bow is, and the bow and the sacrifice is going to take place? And then he got there and he saw this amazing bow. And it's compared to Indra's bow. Now, what is Indra's bow? What is it?
Rainbow.
And this bow was new. It wasn't perhaps as big as a rainbow, but it was compared to a rainbow in size. And it was compared to a rainbow in its colors because there were so many jewels embedded in it. It was very, very thick, long, and very, very thick. And it was being worshipped. So when they got to the bow, the guards surrounding the bow were protecting it, and there were people worshiping the bow. And it was said that this bow could not be strung or broken even by the devatas. Now, there's an interesting story that comes from the Gaugasamita about this bow and how it came to Mathura, how it came into the possession of Kamsa. So before Kamsa had become the king of Mathura and put his own father, Ugrasena, in prison, one has to know that he actually wasn't the son of Ugrasena. Did you know that? But after you hear the story, you'll never again be able to say, I didn't know that. Because you will know. So once there was, that Kamsa's mother was named Padmavati, and Bhagavatamrita, she has a very funny lines, but aside from that, she had a very peculiar mentality, but she was very beautiful. And once a Rakshasa became attracted to her, and he took the form of Ugrasena, and then he went in front of her, and due to that, Kamsa was born. So he actually wasn't the child of Ugrasena, but his mother was Padmavati, who was Ugrasena's wife. So once this Kamsa, who had such a demonic mentality, in its previous life he was Kalanemi, who had been killed by Lord Vishnu, as described in the later on in the 10th canto. So once he was going around, he became very, very, very powerful and always inimical. So he was, the Gauga Samhita describes how he made alliances with Kuvalayapita, with the wrestlers, Chanora, Mastika. And then he came to this great mountain. And on this great mountain lived Parsaram. Do you know Parsaram? Do you know Parsaram? Parsaram. He had killed the Kshatriyas. He was the incarnation of the Lord.
Yeah.
And who had killed all the Kshatriyas. This is described. He was born in a Brahminical family, but he was a Kshatriya of temperament. So he lived alone in this mountain. I can't remember the name of the mountain. And Kamsa got there, and he wanted to show his strength. So he began lifting the mountain, dropping it down. Lifting the mountain and dropping it down, and lifting the mountain and dropping it down. And Parsaram became so angry at him because he hated the mood of Kshatriyas. They were always so proud and fighting each other and killing each other, never mind the citizens. They had their strength and misusing their strength. And therefore, he was famous. I mean, he destroyed generation after generation of Kshatriyas. So when he came out and he saw Kamsa, he said, "You are just like a mosquito. I'm going to kill you. I can crush you just as I can crush a mosquito. You Kshatriyas are all the same." Kamsa said, "I'm not a Kshatriya. I'm a Rakshasa." And somehow or another, he pleased Parsaram, who said, "I will give you this bow." And this is actually... This is actually described in, I think it's in the end of the seventh canto of the Bhagavatam. Now there was the demonic forces, the asuras, were attacking, and Lord Shiva had to save them, and he was not able at that time, So Lord Vishnu came to protect him, and he took the form of a calf and drank up all the nectar or something that was in a pond in the form of that. And he also at that time gave Lord Shiva this powerful bow. This was the bow. So Lord Shiva gave it to Parsaram. And it was in Parsaram's keeping. And Parsaram somehow became pleased with Kamsa, and he said, "I will give you this bow, but if you can pick it up, you can have it. But if you can't pick it up, it will kill you, destroy you." So Kamsa picked it up, and Parsaram was pleased. Perhaps there was some, he strung it. Yeah, he strung it also. He did it very relatively easily. So Parsaram was very pleased because Kamsa was so powerful, and that's why he was able to conquer what he conquered. But then Parsaram told him, "If anyone can break this bow, whoever does break this bow will be the cause of your gift. And that bowl Kamsa had, and he was worshiping it, and on this Chaturdasi, there was going to be a sacrifice for this bowl. So Krishna saw that this big, beautiful, jewel-embedded bow that was so huge and thick, it was guarded by many, many soldiers and Kamsa's men, and they were all worshiping the bow with great respect. And Krishna and Balaram just walked forward, pushed all the guards aside, and they tried to stop him, but he didn't pay any attention to them. And there Krishna is, remember, he's this effulgent, charming, smiling, beautiful, so beautiful boy. And he just pushed everyone aside, and he picked up the bow. Everyone, you can't do this. This is meant for the sacrifice. This is Kamsa's bow. They were guarding it out of their fear of Kamsa, out of their affection and respect of Kamsa. So with his left hand, he lifted the bow, completely disregarding everyone, and he strung it so quickly. No one had any idea what was going on. And he strung it in a fraction of a second as the guards were standing there, just amazed. And he pulled the string, and he snapped the bow in half, just as an elephant may break up some sugar cane. So for me to break a big stalk of sugar cane isn't easy at all. But an elephant just picks it up, nothing. And Krishna snapped it in half with no effort after lifting it with his left hand, without attention, practically speaking. And the guards just watched in amazement. They watched. Their eyes were blinking as they saw Krishna do this, and they understood he had great power. Then, that sound of the bowl breaking, that cracking sound filled the earth, it filled the sky in all directions, and it entered the ear of Kamsa. And immediately he was struck with terror. Because it meant his death was coming closer. And this is Krishna. First kiss, Krishna killed the washerman. And the washerman was delivering clothes for Kamsa. And Kamsa heard about this. Who did this? It was the Krishna. Then Krishna took the ointments, the fragrant ointments meant for Kamsa. And Kamsa had spies everywhere. And he heard about this. And then he heard that Krishna entered the arena where the bow was being worshipped. And then he heard the sound. And he knew it is time to die was coming. He could not accept it. If at that moment or any moment after this, he would have just gone to Krishna and said, I'm so sorry, I really didn't mean to kill all your brothers and put your mother and father in prison. I was proud and everything. Please forgive me. Please accept me. Krishna would immediately, and the whole Bhagavatam would have been completely different. The nature of a demonic person is they just can't do it. And I see when something happens to me and I become angry, and then the voice inside says, just surrender to Krishna. Then I can see there's some part of me that doesn't want to do it. Doesn't want to do. The last thing I want to do is surrender to Krishna. right now after he allowed this to happen to me or something like that, then you have to really have to tell that part to be quiet and do something else, go away or something, or listen and just surrender. So there's a little demonic fellow inside, it seems sometimes, and that demonic fellow, he doesn't want to surrender to Krishna, no matter what, even though he knows who Krishna is, perhaps. Like Kamsa knew, when that bow broke, from that moment on, Kamsa was struck with terror. His life wouldn't end until the next day, but he was confronted with his death, and he was fighting it to the last moment. He was fighting Krishna to the last moment, but he was terrified. So he immediately sent some more guards. He knew what that meant. As soon as he heard the sound, he knew what that meant. The bow had broken. He sent a battalion of guards to fight and kill Krishna. So all the guards who were there, and then the more battalion came, and they were enraged because their duty was to protect that bow and worship it. And the next day, the sacrifice was going to take place. And they're afraid of retribution from Kamsa too. And they were so angry, they took up their weapons and they wanted to grab Krishna. They wanted to seize Krishna and Balaram. And they were all the companions. They surrounded them and they began to shout, Kriyatam Vadyatam, grab him, kill him. But of course, those words can have different meaning. And the words mean also that we are worthy of being killed by Krishna. Also, Mriyatam, men like us should be killed. We should be seized. We should be imprisoned. So because of their pride, though, they weren't thinking like that. But the goddess Saraswati, she turns everything around to Krishna's favor. So the guards came to Krishna, and there Krishna was with the broken bow. And he gave one piece to Balaram. And seeing these people attacking, Krishna and Balaram took up the two halves of the bow, and they began striking down these people. And they killed all the guards. And they killed also the other contingent of soldiers set by Kamsa. And then, and this perhaps is the most astounding part, and then they left the area and just sort of continued their walking around the city. They were, oh, look at this building over here. Have you ever seen something like that? They were completely free from anxiety. It was like nothing. Nothing had happened, but something very significant had happened to Kamsa. That Krishna was just completely at ease, peaceful, looking at the sights, with joking with the coward boys, and all the people, because everyone in the city had heard the breaking of the bow, and they were so attracted to Krishna. It says they had heard. Bhagavatam says they witnessed the amazing deed that Krishna and Balaram had performed, everything from the killing of the washerman to the straightening of Srivakra Kumja, and seeing, they saw their strength. They saw their beauty. And they saw their boldness, their fearless boldness. But they must be two devatas. Very, very powerful, prominent demigods. Of course, they couldn't understand who Krishna actually was. But they became so joyful upon seeing Krishna and Balaram. So, as they began strolling around, and the word that's translated here, Nitsaratal, just moving around, strolling casually at this time with dusk. So I was trying to understand how long they had just entered into the city of Mathura, as we heard yesterday. Was it yesterday? The day before yesterday? The day before. They had just entered in, and it was already twilight time. It was starting to get a little bit dark, and now the sun was beginning to set. So all this took place, my guess is, within an hour or something like that. And the sun was beginning to set, so they, with the coward boys, left the city and went to where Nanda Maharaj and the bullock carts were in a garden outside of the city where they were encamped. So Sukadev Goswami makes a comment that and this is when the gopis were crying and devastated when Krishna was leaving Vrindavan, they said, this day is the most unfortunate day for us. And all the prayers and all the sacrifices we performed and charity we've given to the Brahmins, everything has failed us on this day. But today, the fortune of the residents of Mathura, has risen, and all their sacrifices have borne its fruit, and all the charity they've given have borne its fruit, because today, and all the blessings they've received from the Brahmins have actually worked for them, even though the blessings of our Brahmins have completely failed us. But today, they will have the fortune of seeing Krishna. So at this time, everyone was in Mathura. It was their time of fortune, and it was the time of tears for the residents of Vrindavan. So when Krishna and Balaram arrived back at the wagon encampment, and Nanda Maharaj had already heard what Krishna and Balaram did. They heard, as soon as they came back, the coward boy started talking, you know what Krishna and Balaram did. Krishna broke the bow, he did this, he did that. And Nanda Maharaj was thinking, oh no. He broke the bow meant for the sacrifice. Now Kamsa's going to be angry, even still more angry. I've been keeping this boy out of the sight of Kamsa since the day of his birth. I did not want his evil eye to glance at this boy. And now he's come here. I brought him here just for the festivals, and he wanted to come. And now, oh no, he's broken the bow, and Kamsa's going to be so upset. Why, oh why did I... bring them here? Why did I listen? Why did I do this? Why did I do this? And he was completely in anxiety of ecstasy, just thinking about Krishna and Balaram. And Kamsa was in complete anxiety, but in misery, anxiety, fearful anxiety from Krishna and Nanda Maharaj about Krishna. One was ecstasy, one was the opposite. But Krishna and Balaram, they were completely carefree. And Mother Yashoda had sent, when they were leaving, she had sent some milk from the cows from Vrindavan and soaked rice in that milk. And they had a special hut and a stove underneath. So the cowherd boys in the cart, the cowherd men were carrying his pot filled of this rice from the and the milk from the cows in Vrindavan, and it was cooked so nicely and it was warm. So Krishna and Balaram and the coward boys, they were fed, because Mother Yashoda is always in anxiety too. So Mother Yashoda's anxiety is when because he's not going to get enough food to eat and things like that. Nandamaraj's anxiety about Krishna's welfare and comes completely different. Completely different, although the anxiety is the same. The fact that there is anxiety is the same, but it's completely different and the result is completely different. Because one is anukul and the other is pratikul. One is favorable for Krishna and the other is unfavorable. So Krishna, Balaram, and the boys, they just joked and had this sweet rice made from the milk of the cows that Mother Yashoda had sent and made sure it was okay. And that night, they just slept underneath the carts, just very peacefully, had a very good night's sleep. Nandamaraj the whole night couldn't sleep, and it was anxiety. Kamsa couldn't sleep. But Krishna and Balaram, Mother Yashoda, she couldn't sleep, she couldn't talk, she couldn't do anything. She didn't clean the house after Krishna left. So they were very, very comfortable. And then the Bhagavatam is no more then for now. It just comes, it was terrified. And he couldn't sleep. Finally, he went to sleep. There were so many inauspicious things. So he was seeing bad omens everywhere. He looked in the mirror, he couldn't see his reflection. There were holes in his shadow. When he fell asleep, finally, he had such a fitful sleep. He dreamed that he was being carried by a donkey. He saw so many omens of death. And then the next morning, it says when he looked in the mirror, when he looked, he couldn't see his own head. Reflection. So if you ever look in the mirror and can't see your own head, know that it's not a good sign. So he could not sleep, and when he did sleep, it was very... But yet, as soon as the sun rose, the night had finally passed. Kamsa got up and he became immediately active, trying to arrange the wrestling festival because the Dhanadagya was finished, because the bow was finished. But the wrestling festival was actually the excuse that Kamsa had made to have Krishna killed by these giant wrestlers. So tomorrow we shall hear about that. Yeah. We shall hear about the death of Kamsa. Are you performing a drama tomorrow? Are you in a drama?
I'm in one at school, but not.
Not a Christian. Do you know others? Is there drama tomorrow? Well, they already had it. I'm talking about it.
The temple? Yeah, it happened last Sunday.
Were you in that drama? Who did you play?
Chandra.
Chandra? The moon?
Yeah.
How do you, what you do is a moon in a drama.
Shines. Puff up the ego of Indra.
Huh?
Make Indra feel that he is the most valuable person.
What did you say in the drama?
Everything.
It just shined. Was Navki in the drama too?
Yeah.
What was she?
Samvartaka.
Samvartaka, a destructive cloud.
Yes.
Did she have anything to say?
Yes.
Did you become frightened when she began to talk and rumble?
Mm-hmm.
Who played Indra in the drama?
Radhika.
Does he play a good Indra?
Yeah.
Is he angry at Krishna? Why did he meet up in this high old show? You chanting in your mind right now? Can you whisper in your ears? You pull them too much.
Yes, sir.